Welcome to the simulcast of Love Your Mess. This is Stephanie Gunning. I would like to just begin by reading the preface from the book, Love Your Mess. Your life is a mess, and pretending you have no mess is hard, hard work. Pretending takes time and energy. It drains you and keeps you from non-pretending stuff. And besides, pretending is based on things that just aren't so. I know you don't want to live like that. So, what if your mess was something you accepted, embraced, and loved exactly as it was? What if your mess was what finally gave you the courage to leave a bad relationship, start a new business, lose weight, or give up smoking? What if, instead of just surviving your mess, it became the reason you could really live? In this very moment, there is nothing you and your beautiful mess cannot do, change, or create in your life. Right now. Love your mess. I do. So, we are being joined tonight by author Allison Nazarian, author of the book Love Your Mess. She is a ghostwriter, copywriter, and author who works, teaches, consults, lives, and breathes words, which is why I was attracted to having her on this call. She has been covered and quoted in the Wall Street Journal, Inc. magazine, Fortune Small Business, Ragan's Media, the Christian Science Monitor, and Entrepreneur.com. Originally from the Washington, D.C. area, Allison is a mom, a walker, a reader, a dog owner, an eater of very dark chocolate, yay, lover of ladybugs, football fan, and I doubt you're still a someday bookstore owner.
I sort of am.
You sort of are. And she claims that she lives a very messy life. So welcome, Allison, to this call.
Thank you so much. I have to say, it's kind of a surreal and weird experience to have somebody read something that you wrote back to you, and I'm like, please, God, let there be no typo or anything wrong in there.
Look, I'm an editor, too. If there was a typo, I would just fix it. I think that we got callers on tonight because people really recognize this whole idea of mess in life. And what do you mean when you're talking about mess?
That's a great question, because a lot of people will say to me, well, you know, I didn't make my bed, or I have dishes in my sink, or, you know, I didn't take the trash out for 2 weeks. And all of that is a literal mess and makes life messier. But beyond all of that, like, there's this whole mess that is your life. And it could be like, you know, your kids in detention, or your dog, you know, peed in the house, or you missed a deadline, or your jeans don't fit, or all of the things that just, like, could potentially derail us during our day, or could send us into a tailspin, or, like, you, what did you call it, a yapping poodle?
Yelping.
Just, like, all the things that, like, I do this all the time, that can say, the rest of my day is done, or the rest of my week is done, or I'm not going to be able to do the thing that I wanted to do, or everything's ruined. So all of those things that, like, make up this big picture of our life that are not necessarily neat and tidy and perfect and how we would have created it if we could have done the whole thing ourselves. So, yes, it's the dishes in your sink and your messy bed, but it's also all of the things way beyond that.
So it could be emotional, it could be mental, it could just be a traffic jam that's so inconvenient, or spilling coffee on yourself and needing to go back and change, or whatever.
Absolutely. It's all of the things that either you can cry and bury your head under the pillow, or you can laugh about them, or you can just keep plowing forward. Sometimes we use them as excuses not to do something or to do something. Sometimes we kind of use them as excuses to get to reject something or not reject something. So it's sort of, they're going to all these things are going to exist whether we want them to or not, or whether we have very little control over so many of them anyway. So, and that's really the thing. I mean, it's all going to be there no matter how we look at it or no matter what we do with it. So it's kind of like, well, maybe we could do something good with it.
Right. You know, that is a beautiful thing about being a creative person, you know, taking one's mess and turning it into something.
Yes. And I should say, because sometimes people who don't know me will say, well, maybe she's just using that as an excuse to, like, not clean her house or to, you know, be a mess. And I'm one of those, like, really annoying, you know, bordering on out of control neat people. So I don't use it as, I'm not, you know, my house is not a physical mess. Like, if
you are you like a Felix Unger?
If I don't keep myself in check, I could potentially be, yes. And I'm working on, we teach what we need to learn, right? So part of my big whole thing is I'm working on, you know, sometimes I literally make myself go to sleep with, like, dishes in the sink. And that might sound crazy, ridiculous.
That's like your recovery program.
Exactly. So
let me ask you. So
so
if you're a neat and tidy person, who has mess?
Everybody. I mean, sometimes the neat and tidy folks have the biggest mess because we're so fixated or busy trying to hide it or pretend that we don't have it or clean it up. So, I mean, for instance, I was in a bordering on bad marriage for many years, and like, I kind of hid it from myself and thought I was hiding it from other people because I wanted everybody, myself included, to think it was really perfect and great. And then one day when I finally admitted it wasn't and I was like, that's it, it's done, everyone's like, God, what took you so long? So it was like I thought I was hiding something and, you know, putting this perfect picture out in the world. Meanwhile, I wasn't fooling anybody, and it took so much effort to be that person in that picture-perfect marriage that I really wasn't. So, you know, it's kind of like when you free up that energy, and no matter what the thing is, whether it's a big thing like that or a small thing like the dishes, when you free it up, then you can do all the things that you want to do that you were putting off because you didn't have any space or energy for them.
Yeah, I love that's a big promise of your book that I really enjoyed. I loved, first of all, I was really attracted to your cover, and I just loved how you said you try to run from it, hide it, change it, deny it, defy it.
Thank you. I actually have it framed above my desk. I'm looking at it right now.
but you also have a phrase on your cover, and there's so many more, which is that every single part of your mess is here for a reason.
Yes.
So when I got it, I've just been flipping around in it. I'm not being very linear about the way I've been reading your book. I just flip in it, and you say so many cool things, you know.
But thank you. It's funny that you said flip, because when I send it to people, like I send it to you, I do this thing where I kind of randomly open it to a page, and I put the little bookmarker in there, and I think, okay, like, that's the page this person should read first. Like, it's like a message from the universe to this person.
Well, so, you know, what are we talking about? You know, practically, what is it that you're advising in this book?
Well, it's important, and that I think we talked about this a little, or I sent you some stuff about this. Like, I'm not any, like, expert on other people's lives. I'm not a guru, which I just don't like that word at all. I'm not a self-help development, personal development person. Like, I'm just a regular person like every other person on this call. I'm an amazing, brilliant person like everyone else on this call, but I'm a regular person. Like, I don't know the answers for you in your life. I don't know the answers for anybody else in their life. And I think when a lot of times what happens is we're all seeking, like, answers and signs and, you know, this is what we're supposed to do and this is how we're going to do it. And And then people tell us, and I think it's gotten, like, more prevalent in this whole, you know, our internet, Twitter, Facebook, social media world. Like, there are people out there saying, you know, I'm going to uncover the secrets to freedom. I'm going to uncover the secrets to, you know, making your business explode. I'm going to uncover the secrets to your great, happy life. And you're like, yes, I want some of that. I need this person. And then that, it doesn't work out. Then you go to the next person. I need this person. And I used to say it's sort of like this book. I don't know if people on the call remember this book from a million years ago, but Are You My Mother? Where, like, this, I don't remember if it was a dog.
It's like a little, it's a children's book with the little bird.
Yeah.
The worm.
Yeah.
Like,
bird,
are you
yeah.
my mother?
Yes. It kept going to all these different creatures. Like, we're all so desperate looking for the answers and looking to fix everything when we already, like, have whatever it is we need inside of us. And so the whole point of the mess is sort of like that's part of our quote-unquote answer is mess. So, like, whatever, you know, we have people in our lives who we don't get along with or who really push our buttons or we're like, why does this person keep coming up? You know, it's really hard to do this, but it's like in that moment think, okay, what lesson is, you know, what's the lesson here? Because this person is in my life for this reason. This obstacle is in my life for this reason. And you know, I'm not going to tell you why it happens in your life because I don't know. But I think a lot of times if we just, like, look at it from that kind of a perspective rather than I can't do, you know, as long as this person is my boss, I'm not going to be able to do well in my job or, you know, things like that. It's sort of like it's, instead of using it as an obstacle or as a stopping point, it's almost like a thing that we can use as a fuel to keep going forward.
I love that idea of taking it as fuel. I'm one of these people, Allison, who I serve clients and I also create my own writing like you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I often get into this situation where I feel like I have too many things to do at the same exact time.
Mm-hmm.
And that yes. I recreate that pattern over and over. And every time I get myself out of it, I do it to myself again. And I keep thinking, one day I'm going to learn the lesson. I don't know what it is yet. But you know, if I just, like, embrace, like, if I take your advice here and I just embrace that that's part of me and it's part
mm-hmm.
of what fuels me, I know that every time I said yes to one of those things, it was from enthusiasm, excitement, some connection that,
mm-hmm.
you know, it fueled me. That's the exact right word. It lifted me off the ground pretty much because I'm very inspired by the people that I work with. So, you know, I don't know how to go about getting a lesson out of that. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I love that, the inspiration. I mean, because there's like the specific issue that you're talking about where we tend to say, like, yes when we shouldn't be saying yes or when we don't have the space to say yes or whatever. And then there's the bigger issue, like, doing the things that fuel us or that move us or that inspire us. And, like, and if we, quote, unquote, screw it up or we overschedule ourselves or we have too many things on the to-do list or you're all double booked or whatever, you know, not beating yourself up about it. I mean, that's a huge thing for me is, you know, in overcoming my perfectionism disease, can we call it? You know, it's that whole, like, beating myself up about things that I messed up or things that I didn't could have done better or saying yes when I meant no or vice versa. So, I mean, you obviously see where, like, things might be, I don't want to say, like, tripping up a little bit. I don't
mm-hmm.
want to say breakdown because I don't think it's a breakdown. But where you're...
Breakdown. That's tomorrow.
So, you know, I mean, something will give and you'll figure it out. And in the meantime, it doesn't seem to be stopping you up. I mean, I know you had, you know, an issue today where you were probably really frustrated and stressed about something, and we all have that, and I tend to have those, like, at 2 o'clock every afternoon. but you'll figure it out. And in the meantime, before you figured it out, like, I think that time is really ripe for still moving forward and doing stuff. And I think, and definitely from my own experience, that's where we sometimes don't do it. Like, we'll get tripped up with something and it's like, that's it. that this sucks, I suck, I screwed up.
Oh, you mean
done,
I could
whatever.
Have gone back to bed in the middle of the afternoon? I didn't realize that was an option.
And you definitely didn't have to.
There are other choices.
Well, when you work at home, I mean, and that took me years to, like, be okay with. I mean, for the first years I worked at home, I was really uptight about it. Like, I never left my office for 10 hours a day except to go eat or use the restroom. But then I've gotten a little more lenient the past little bit. But, yeah, if that's what it takes, I mean, and then you come back all revved up and ready to go.
So do you find that when you start talking about messes, everybody starts telling you about their messes?
Yes.
Do you ever call anybody out on a mess?
I don't, because what I find is that once people realize that it's okay to talk about it and to laugh about it and that they're not alone, which is a huge, huge thing not to be under taken lightly, the whole not alone part, I find that people, they really want to talk about it and they really want to share it, and it's almost like when it gets out of your head and you start talking about it, all of a sudden you see whatever stories you've been telling yourself inside your head just don't fly. It's almost like you realize it yourself before anybody else has to tell it to you. So, I mean, I just find there's a lot, it's almost like a Seinfeld kind of thing. Like, you know, Seinfeld, the show was just, and the guy, so hilarious, so relatable. You know, even people who had never been to New York City in their lives thought it was hilarious. And what was it about? It was just about everyday life, things that every single person could relate to, like little quirky things that we'd never even thought to, like, discuss with each other because they were just kind of like things that always happened to everybody. So I think it's kind of the same idea. Like, once you start, like, it's hard to remember the world before, like, Facebook and Twitter and everybody sharing everything. But even, like, 10 years ago, I think people were so much more isolated and alone, and there were no ways to sort of, like, share these kinds of things with people beyond your, like, immediate world. So I think with all of that and just people kind of being more open in general, I think, it just allows people, like, If I wrote something on Facebook about, like, how frustrated I am about something, or how, I mean, I had this, I'll give you a perfect example. About 2 weeks ago, I went to meet, I thought it was a prospective client, and I usually don't meet clients in person, usually because they don't even live in my local area, but this client happened to be local, and they wanted to meet me, and long story short, it was a disaster, like, disaster. And they were rude to me and unprofessional and nasty and, like, dismissed me after 9 minutes, and I felt like a kid who had done something wrong, and just like for a minute I felt like a world-class loser when I knew
so,
I was.
So did you feel like you were the person who had done the wrong thing, not
well,
this rude
yeah,
person?
At first, my first inclination was, like, how did I mess this up? Basically, I had sent them all the information that they requested and everything that they needed to sort of evaluate me and figure it out, and I was told, well, this is just a formality. Just come in and meet the whole team. Well, the whole team was one other person who didn't seem to know that I was even coming and therefore hadn't looked at anything that I'd sent and made me feel like I was totally unprepared because I didn't physically bring, like, the things that she needed because I'd sent them all by email. So she said, well, you know, you don't have this, and you don't have this, and you don't have this. How could I even evaluate you? And it was like, well, I sent it to your colleague, and he just sat there the whole time, didn't come to my defense. So I left, and I was like, God, you know, how did I mess this up? And then I realized, well, they really messed it up, and, you know, it happened. But I wrote about it on Facebook, and I kind of detailed about it, and I got so much feedback, and people said, oh, this happened to me too, and, you know, don't worry about it, and, you know, just keep going. You're glad. It's a good thing you're not working with them, and, you know, people were so supportive, and it just totally, like.
Yeah, you kind of did dodge a bullet there.
Yeah, exactly, because I kept thinking if I had to work with this woman, like, that would be a nightmare. So it was just like, it reinforced this idea that the more vulnerable we are, like, And then the more real we are, really, the more we connect with people, like, on a very deep level. Like, it's the kind of thing, you know, you see somebody
yes.
who you know, hi, how are you? Oh, great, how are you? And it's like,
yeah.
I don't think you're really great, but what are you going to tell the person, you know, in that one moment?
Yeah, you know what you're saying to me that's resonating so strongly is we are all human beings. We are immersed in the human condition, which involves so many complicated facets. And it can get pretty ugly, messy, nonsensical, crazy, nutty, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But if you can accept your humanity and be vulnerable, I love that word, because to some people who are really defended, that means weakness. But to me, vulnerability is the ultimate strength, because it really allows the energy to keep moving between people. And you received so much support for your humanity just by sharing that. And you know, that's beautiful, because when you were describing it, it was getting me in my gut, you know. I was like, oh, my God, that's like sneak attack from
right.
strangers, you know.
Right. And, we've all had some,
yeah.
you might not have had the exact same thing, but I'm sure you've been in a situation where you've had those same emotions.
And then there's that voice. You get when the French call it l'esprit de l'escalier, or I'm not saying it correctly, the spirit of the stairs, meaning if right after you left the scene, you suddenly remember the thing you should have said.
Yes, I'm still remembering it.
If only I had said.
Right.
but when you accept yourself and you're pretty vulnerable, that's a great opportunity. You could have just said to those people, wow, I was totally unprepared for this. I guess this meeting shouldn't continue, and you could have laughed or something.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I don't know what the right thing to do is. I don't have the answer, but yeah. Yeah.
And I think the more, you know, what I found is kind of like, because I went through a lot of my life being very closed and feeling I needed to be perfect, maybe for people to love me or whatever. But what I found since my best friend calls it, what did she call it? Since she broke open, I call it uncracked. But since I uncracked probably like 2.5 years ago, what I find is it becomes kind of like, almost addictive. Like once you start to do it so much more, and almost to the point where like you can't have a shallow interaction with somebody anymore. Or, like you do sometimes, but you don't enjoy it, or you're so hyper aware.
Right.
So there's
a kind of transparency and authenticity about what. And you said something beautiful. In your book, you talked about getting the energy back from stopping hiding.
Yes. Well, I think it's being who you're not, or thinking that you need to put out a certain image, or literally or figuratively, is so consuming. Your energy, your time, your mental space, and it's like, if you're so caught up in that, and the more you're caught up in that, the more it sort of feeds itself, then there's no room for anything else. It's like if you have a conflict with somebody that you care about and you're stressed about it, you're angry about it, you're upset about it, finally, once it's resolved or once you get it out, it's like, wow, you know, that's a huge thing lifted from me. And you feel like light and free. It's like it's sort of the same thing, but this is something that often goes on, you know, much longer term. So, it's, you know, I liken it to sort of, you know, sweeping stuff under your bed, that old, like, metaphor where you just, you know, keep, whatever it is, where you sweep stuff under your bed, and, you know, then eventually you can't do that anymore.
Right.
So
what other, you know, what kind of messes do we face when we're being creative?
Oh, that's such a good question. And, you know, you talk about creatives, and I know that most of the people listening are in that category, and that was actually another area where I kind of rejected that word and that self-characterization. Like, I didn't want I wanted to be a quote-unquote serious business person. So I wasn't going to call myself a creative. I wasn't even going to call myself a writer. I was a copywriter for businesses. Like, I tried to – it was very important to me that it sounded very left brain and very, like, black and white and serious. So
the word copy makes it left brain?
See, in my head it did. In my head it did. You see, we do these things where we make up these stories, but – yes, because then I worked with serious business, and I still work with serious businesses,
yeah.
But in my head, it all, like, sort of had to be neat in that way. But, I mean, as far as creative, I think it's just such a ripe, like, we work with very messy ideas and messy stories and messy mediums, like, that's our fuel in a lot of ways, to use that word again. So it's kind of the same idea. Like, if we started pretending it wasn't there or not using it, you know, milking all of the greatness out of it, then we wouldn't have the great things that we're creating. I mean, it's kind of like we couldn't even do what we do without messy things. Like, I couldn't write if I didn't have stuff going on in my life that I couldn't figure out or that, you know, was confusing or that was annoying or that was heartbreaking. If everything was really perfect, like the person who says, oh, I'm great, how are you? You know, there's no story there.
Right. There's no conflict to overcome, no drama, yeah.
Right. And it's not that I'm looking to create drama or angst or anything like that, but it's reality. You know, that's what's real. It's like the meatiness of life, and that's what artists and creatives grab onto and thrive on. That's without that, there's no fodder for what they do.
I wonder who doesn't have that in their field. Maybe mathematicians, until they get to some problem, you know, that can't be solved, right?
That's so funny.
And then the whole thing, like, falls to shreds.
And then they create a new theory or something.
Right, exactly, like the theory of everything. We're looking for the theory of everything now.
It's funny that you say that because I've said before, like, some days I just wish I did something, like, neat and tidy, you know, like accounting, where you add everything up and you know if it's right or wrong or if you have to go back to the drawing board, and eventually it all adds up and you move on to the next thing.
Right.
And it just
right.
seems so nice and neat and logical.
And yet there are a lot of people who they can add their money up and they still come out and they can't explain the missing $5.73.
And that's maddening.
Yes. There was some,
right?
Like, black hole in their day when they bought, like, the world's most expensive cup of coffee or something, and they don't remember it. You
they
know?
Didn't properly record it.
And they fell in the hole. You know, it's funny.
Yes.
I just, thinking of the mathematical equivalent, I remember that show Numbers. I don't know if anybody else but me likes to watch these kinds of things, but one of the brothers is a super genius. He's like 25, and he's a professor in a college, and his brother is in the FBI. And so he always solves these problems, and, you know, and he's always looking for the patterns because he believes everything can be explained mathematically. And somewhere halfway through, he'll go, oh, there was one factor I didn't consider. Now it all makes sense, you know. The murderer is over here. Let's go get him, you know.
You're like, I want that factor for my life. Then I can figure it all out.
And I'm like, wow, you can apply math to that? Like, to explain the way a bird walks or something? I mean, everything, you know. How rocks fall. It's totally chaotic in my view, you know.
That makes me think of a kind of a connected point, like chaos versus like order. I mean, I'm one of those people, like I said, I like things, I guess my natural like default is to feel very comfortable and happy and calm when things are like neat and orderly or fixed up or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's very tiring and consuming to be that way. And, you know, not everything ultimately can be explained. Like, sometimes things happen and there's no nice, neat reason for it. Or, you know, if something bad happened, you know, I still do this to this day. You know, why does this person treat me this way? Or why did this happen? Or to me or to somebody else? Or it's almost like that's part of the mess, too. Like, you're not going to get your neat, perfect, logical answer for everything. And I think a lot of creative people actually thrive on that as well. I don't know that I would put myself in that category, unfortunately. But that's part of it, though. I mean, not everything can be explained or categorized or put in the right drawer or that kind of thing. So I think that's another important sort of aspect of it that I actually have never really even thought that much about until you mentioned that. But
it's quite interesting. I want to ask you about your writing process because, you know, if writing were like neat and tidy, like, you know, working with an abacus or something, you wouldn't you be able to sit down and just the first time write perfectly?
Yes.
Like, so how do you write? Because you write beautifully.
Thank you. I like this book or my blog or the things that I love to write the most. I really write as I think/speak,
mm-hmm.
and I don't. I probably there's nothing like highbrow literary about it.
No, you write like a person, and you write like a kind of an entertaining, funny person.
Thank you. I like that.
Yeah.
I mean, that, you know, if you and I, well, I mean, we're having a conversation right now, but if we met for coffee tomorrow, we'd probably talk the same way as, like, I would talk the same way as I write in there. So, but it is actually presenting sort of a challenge for me because, for instance, I'm writing another book that I've written like an 80-page proposal for, and I still don't have the right structure for it. And it's kind of, and part of it is that I'm trying to conform it to what I think it's supposed to be in order to be like bought by an agent or whatever, or by a publisher or whatever. But that, as far as you asked about the process, like it's really tough when you sit down and your writing voice wants to write one way, but you feel like you're supposed to be writing another way. And that's like a, I guess it's a constant struggle. I don't want to talk for everybody, but for me, if I sit down and I know I'm writing something that is just for my blog or that nobody's ever going to see, like, I'm much freer and more open and more me.
How much?
And so I'm trying to, like, marry those two.
Yeah. How much time do you spend thinking before you put your fingers on the keys?
Usually zero.
So you flow it out and then you rearrange it.
Yeah, I mean, I shouldn't say I don't. All I do is think way too much. But as far as about what I'm going to write, yeah. And then like a lot of it does see the light of day. But then there's some that's just like I couldn't even read it again, let alone, you know, show another human being on planet Earth.
How often do you blog?
I used to blog quite often, like almost every day. Then I stopped, like over the summer and until kind of recently, I kind of stopped. I think I was just going through a lot of stuff and I didn't know what to say and I don't like to force it because it's not my business blog where I'm like, okay, you have to write every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So I just stopped for a little while. And then recently I started up again. I mean, ideally I love the interaction with people and people's comments. So, and I kind of, that's one of my fuels. So I want to keep doing it more, but I also only want to do it when it feels very natural. So ideally I would love to do it like twice a week.
Because to me that's got to be part of your ability to write in your own voice is that you just do it, you know, and that
absolutely.
I love that you talked about social media and how it seems to me like, you know, I don't know when you started blogging. Maybe that's part of it too. You said you've in the past few years you cracked open and you've become more authentic and just who you are.
Mm-hmm.
In public and in private, you know. And, you know, so I would imagine that helped unleash this creative juice that you're pouring on the page,
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. I mean, I had a blog back in the early days of having blogs, maybe like 06, 07, and I used to write about, you know, copywriting tips and SEO copywriting and writing copy for your brochure. And it was very informative and educational, but it was really boring. I mean, it was useful, but it was boring. And then I went through my, you know, transformation. And I think part of it actually came from Twitter, where I sort of kind of found my voice there, I think. And then I started blogging about totally different things. You know, there was no more. In fact, just like about a month or two ago, I went in my blog and deleted all those old posts. Like, I just took them out of there. There were probably like 60 posts I deleted.
You erased your life. Oh, no.
Yeah. I was just like, this is like information. It's not like 100 million different people could have written this. It's not me only. I mean, I kept the copy. I was like, oh, maybe I'll make it into an ebook and give it away. But, yeah, I was just like, this doesn't belong on the same blog as, you know, the other stuff, the math stuff. So,
well, in your book, you talk about you do tell a lot of personal stories. I'm just flipping through it right now. I love it. You describe. Hang on. Today is the day, and other stories I tell myself.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little about that?
Yeah. So what page is that on? Because I want to open.
That's
that
on
too.
46.
Okay. So that I wrote. I think I wrote that at the end of a particularly frustrating day or weekend where I had had this, like, huge to-do list and great high hopes, and, like, nothing happened. I didn't get anything done. And to me, that's, like, a super frustrating big part of my mess that I'm trying to deal with. So so I wrote this, Today is the Day and Other Stories I Tell Myself, about, like, you know, at night you go to sleep, or on Friday after work, or Monday when your week starts, you say, oh my God, today I'm going to do, you know, I'm going to get these 10 things done, and I'm going to eat only healthy food, and I'm going to be so nice to everybody, and I'm going to have amazing ideas, and my kids are going to, like, do all the chores that they've never once before done, and all these great things are going to happen today. And then today comes and goes, and you're like, God, you know, today kind of sucked because I didn't get any of that done. And then you're like, okay, tomorrow is going to be the day. And it can get frustrating because a lot of us have these huge expectations of ourselves and of others. And then when the thing doesn't happen, or it doesn't get done, or the other person doesn't come through, it's like, well, that stinks. You know, like, why does this keep happening? And so I decided to, and in here where I wrote, like, you know, I was going to eat healthy and all these great things today, and then instead I ended up, like, gorging on Cheetos, having, like, these unexpected pimples, clothes that don't fit, at least one kid who hates me, a dog who threw up, like, you know, all these regular messy things, and you're like, tomorrow I'm going to have, you know, the life I'm supposed to have, but today I guess I'm still me.
So when you get that all down on paper, did you feel better about it?
You know, I do. I mean, even now I'm kind of laughing about it because I'm thinking, you know, I mean, I wrote this probably about two years ago. I'm thinking, you know, it's still totally relevant for me today because, you know, I still have those days. And it's like, as opposed to in the past where I might have told myself, you know, bad things about myself or bad things about why it happened or not told anybody else about it and kept it inside, I wrote about it and I was like free. And then other people, you know, even you just in this moment, you know, it resonated. So to me, that's like, you know, the gold crown. That's like the best thing that could happen.
So we can start the day with best of intentions. It can get totally out of control. And then we go to sleep and we wake up and it starts over.
Yes. Yes, and you see these other people, and you're like, well, their life is so perfect, and they're eating, you know, drinking green smoothies all day, and their kids wash the dishes, and, you know, their dog never threw up in the house, and, you know, which none of those things are probably true, but, you know, we do that, and we're like, okay, tomorrow it's going to start. It's the same thing when we want to lose weight. The diet's going to start tomorrow, or this is, you know, I'm going to quit this tomorrow, and sometimes we do, and sometimes we don't.
Right. So there. So change and the transitions of life can be very messy. And
absolutely.
And, you also talk about, you know, getting out of your comfort zone.
Yes. Yes. There was one. I think the one you're talking about. There was one where I think it's in the book where I would go to different Starbucks, you know, around where I live sometimes to do my work or to do writing, especially back then. And I would always, whichever one I went to, I would always sit in the same place in that particular Starbucks. And so once I went and I met another friend, and he was working there too, and he noticed that this big purple, like velvety, comfy chair had become open, the two of them. And he's like, let's go sit over there. Let's get that chair. And I'm like, oh, no, I don't move from this spot. This is my spot. And he's like, come on. I'm like, okay, fine. And I usually never work with somebody else. I was like, okay, fine, whatever. So then I had to pick up, like, my snacks and my water and my bag and my computer and just schlep all my stuff to wherever the purple comfy chair was. So I sat down, and he sat in the other chair. And a little while later, he left, and I was still working there. And long story short, another guy ended up sitting in that chair and started talking to me, oh, what do you do? You know, what do you, blah, blah, blah. And we ended up becoming friends. And to this day, he's a friend of mine. And I never would have met him if I hadn't moved to the purple chair that I'd never sat in before. So to me, that was like, especially during that time, because I was writing this book and I was going through my divorce, it was like a time where I was like doing things that weren't, you know, typical me kind of things. And I am naturally an introvert, so I'm not the kind of person that usually just meets people in a Starbucks or starts talking to strangers. Even though I'd like to be that person, I'm not that person. So for me, it was definitely something out of my comfort zone and something that ended up, you know, giving me a new friend. So I had to write about it, of course.
Well, I know that you also teach an e-course on loving your mess, and I'm so curious what you do with that. How do you teach people loving your mess?
Well, for me, the vehicle for getting out my mess and loving it is writing. For other people, it's other things. And I've seen so many people heal and find peace and get things off their chest through writing, not just professional writers, but people who write privately on their own every single day for themselves. So I created this course called Write Your Mess, where people, it's a 6-week course, and it's ongoing because it's an email course, where people basically write about their own mess and do all sorts of different exercises and set up their own writing space wherever it is in their home or their office and do all these things to set it up so that they have this kind of like a tool or almost like a comforting kind of tool that they can turn to every day or every other day or whatever works for them and sort of figure out what the mess is, get it out, make space, you know, so the mess isn't taking up all that space inside, make space for all these great things that they want to do and kind of keep using that fuel, like we talked about, keep moving forward.
It is pretty powerful. I love what you just said about getting it out of you. What are some of the other ways we can get mess out of us?
Well, I think we all have you probably have artists on the call, writers. I think talking to people that care about you or that you love is so important. Not just pretending that everything's great or, you know, saying everything's great, like just getting it out. I mean, but writing is something that we don't need any other person sitting on the phone or sitting next to us. We can spill it out, and it's totally private, and it's actually with the e-course, one of the bonuses is an audio interview that I did with a therapist who talked all about writing as therapy and how, you know, the healing aspects of it from a therapy standpoint. And I was like, oh, well, in that case, I'm, you know, doing therapy on myself every single day. And it's just true. And I think once you start, also you come to sort of rely on that. And if you don't do it for a day or two, like, you can tell, you can feel it. And I just think it's such a positive way to get that out. And also, you can see your progress. You know, you have your written journals, or you have the computer files, or whichever way you choose to write, whether it's handwriting or computer, and I talk about that in the course too. You have this record of it, and it's just so fulfilling, and it's so it gives you such a sense of, like, not just accomplishment of, but of, wow, I'm really, like, taking this into my own hands and moving forward. It's just a great thing, I think.
I think writing is a phenomenally important transformational tool. I was saying it before you got on the line. I'm going out to Denver over the weekend and teaching a workshop called Full Soul Expression, which is about authentic and transformational writing. And I do it in a little bit different way than you do, but, you know, which is really to help people to access the greatest, highest part of themselves, and then to use that almost to create a legacy in the world, you know, to create some movement and shift that's beneficial to other people. So it's sort of like dovetails with what you're describing. But I did a lot of research over the last couple of years about the neurobiology of writing, and what you're saying is absolutely true. I can attest to that.
Wow, I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah,
another
conversation in the future. But it really is, it can help the brain, particularly when you're very emotional, to process by putting words to emotional situations. And they don't even really know exactly why it works. But it just helps the parts of the brain talk to each other so that the information can be stored and then resolved. And you can, you know, as little as writing 4 days in a row about the same issue from different viewpoints, the benefits are astonishing, actually.
Yeah.
So your course is probably exactly what so many people need when they're jammed up, you know?
Yes. I mean, one of the things that I get so much feedback on from the course specifically is this one part where I have people write a letter to their mean voice, you know, that mean voice we all have in our head constantly for some people. And it's just, it's like, the voice doesn't go away necessarily, but we kind of stand up to it, and that can be like a huge, huge turning point for some people.
I love that idea. Has anybody ever sent you the letter that they wrote just to show it to you?
Yeah. I actually recently had a guy send me a 3,000-word letter.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very powerful.
So he had just basically been waiting for someone to give him permission to speak back to his critic.
Yeah. Yes, and I don't even think he knew that, but yes, exactly.
I did a workshop with a woman who teaches, she calls it compassionate communication, but some other people call it nonviolent communication. And and she actually had these two hand puppets, and one was a giraffe, which is the nice voice, and one was the jackal. You'd be doing the, you know, your little moment, and she'd say, "Here, have the puppets." And then she'd be like, "Jackal yourself." And then you go, "Ooh, you're so bad. You're so stupid. You're so slow. You're such a procrastinator." And then after you do that for a while, she's like, "Now, let the giraffe talk. It's okay. You're doing your best." And it was really, really, really fun. But that voice that you're describing is the jackal.
Yes, I like how you used it as a verb, jackal yourself. Is that what you said?
Yeah, she said that, but I've adopted it. Yeah. Like the jackal is the animal, you know, that like they run in packs and they like rip the flesh off the bones of their prey, you know.
Yes, and we do that to ourselves sometimes, whether we mean to or not. Yeah.
I love it. So, boy, there's so much of value here. I mean, it's almost like there's so much psychology to this, but at the same time, what I love about the way you talk about loving your mess is that you put it in just, it's just very regular person talking to another person, describing different scenarios.
Yeah.
And you have this one, you have this other piece called the formal dining room syndrome.
That's so funny. That's the one I wanted to bring up with you. Yes. That is so funny. Yes. That's one, that might be one of my favorites because it just, yeah, sorry, I interrupted you.
No, go on, please. Please tell us about it.
Well, I went through this period of like, I think it was a few weeks where I just went kind of nuts, like throwing stuff away from my house after I broke up with my husband, my ex-husband. And like I just kept getting rid of stuff. And a lot of it I'd tell him, you know, come over, get this. I gave him tons of furniture. I just kept giving stuff away. And it got to the point where my living room and my dining room were totally empty. And I actually really liked it because I never really used either of those rooms. I didn't really like how they were furnished, and I felt like I could start from scratch. But other people, like my kids and neighbors and my kids' friends who came over, they really didn't like it. Like, they'd come, and the empty space made people really uncomfortable. Like, they thought, like, something was wrong with me, or maybe, like, my furniture got repossessed, or, like, people were really, like, nervous about it. So I was like, no, I'm just waiting to see like how I'm going to furnish it and what's the next stage. So at the same time, I actually, and I don't know if I wrote this in that chapter, but I actually threw away my wedding dress because I wanted to sell it. I had this really like expensive, ridiculously expensive custom made wedding dress, and I didn't have any use for it. And it was at that point like maybe 13 or 14 years old, and turns out I couldn't sell it. It was like too old to sell, and it just became this big problem to sell it. So at the same time that I was giving away all this furniture, I threw it away. Like, I literally put the box that it was in out on the curb one night with the trash and saw the trashman the next morning like take it away. So all of these like physical pieces of my former life were like literally like flying out the door. So So the whole thing with the dining room was kind of like, all people have these dining rooms, and like, I can't speak for everybody, but I never used mine. Like, my kids and I eat in the kitchen, and even if I had friends for dinner, we never ate in this dining room, and it was just like taking up space. So it was sort of just like this whole metaphor for, you know, things that fill up that your space that you don't really use and don't serve you. And then when they're gone, it's like, You're glad they're gone, but there's this, like, discomfort. Like, it's empty, and it's like, what's going to go next? Is it going to be better? What if it's worse? Like, it's scary. It's, like, in that middle stage. So I actually ended up making my what used to be the dining room into what I call the Zen room. And, I have these really funky, like, little sofas and all these cool little, like, teapots and, like, just like really nice things that I like that just relax me. And I sit in there sometimes and my kids really love it. And it's just this really cute little corner, like room where like it nourishes me now and it makes me happy now. And, you know, it was scary because I didn't know necessarily it would turn out great like that. You know, maybe I should have just stuck with the comfortable dining room furniture that nobody ever used. But to me, it was like sort of like, okay, I took this leap and I had faith that I would find the right thing, even if it stayed empty for a while, and that's what happened. But we all have, that's why I called it the formal dining room syndrome, where we have this thing that we hang on to that we don't love and it doesn't really do that much for us, but we don't know what would take its place. So the fear of that is worse than just kind of...
Right, so keeping the status quo because we know what it is.
Yeah.
Even if there's the potential for something better, like a Zen room.
Yes, exactly.
You know, I had some feng shui consultants come to my house one time as part of a class. Mm-hmm. Their teacher was my friend, and she needed a place to let them experiment. And mm-hmm. I was like, okay, bring them on over. And I got into this conflict where they wanted to move my desk. Mm. And... the students could not persuade me. And finally they went, and she was in the other room. They got her, they brought her, and she said to me, Stephanie, if you want your life to remain small, you'll keep your desk over here pushed against the wall. And if you want your life to be big, you'll turn it and face it out this way. And I was like, well, if you put it that way, I've got to turn the desk. So I turned the desk, and I left the desk there for like 2 years. And then one time I was just remarking to her about that experience and how, and she said, yeah, you were so resistant. And she said, actually, there was no actual reason to move the desk except for your resistance to moving it.
Oh, wow.
She said, I have to tell you that because you might want to push it back now.
Did you push it back?
It is back, but I have a different desk now. So I have a rather small New York apartment, so everything has to be kind of tidy so I can have some room. But, it's that the you can live in a space and then one day it's just filled with crap. And yeah. You're like, how did this all get here? Someone gave it to you, you bought a book, you bought a CD, you bought a blender, you know, boom, there's no room to breathe, you know. And when I have that moment of aha, that's when I start, decluttering, like you're describing. I've never emptied entirely, but that was a bold move.
since then, actually, sometimes when I feel like all like tense or stuck or whatever, I'm like, maybe I need to declutter, so I'll just pick something and just start throwing stuff out. And then I usually do actually feel much better, even if it's totally unrelated to whatever I was feeling before.
So we're actually getting, fairly close to the end of this call, and is there anything that you really want people to know about before we get off?
Well, I'd love for people who are listening live or who listen to the recording to connect with me. I'd love to know that they listened or that something resonated with them or if they had any questions. Through Twitter, they can connect with me. It's just my name, at Allison Nazarian, or through my website, same name. How convenient. I would just love to, I love knowing, what resonated with people or selfishly maybe also to, know what people are thinking. But that's the thing that really lights me up. So if anyone's interested in learning more about Write Your Mess or about the book Love Your Mess, I'd love to talk to them about that too.
Yeah, there are some buttons on the screen too that people can push. And we've had quite a lot of people on the webcast. So if you look on the lower left-hand side, you'll see a big button that goes to the book. Actually, I can't remember if I set the button up to the book or the course, but there are both. And,
oh, I see.
I just love talking to you. Maybe it's because I love talking to other professional writers or just authors or whatever, but, to me, this kind of, anything to do with the human condition and how we navigate life is always fascinating to me.
Thank you. I feel the same. I mean, I feel like we just, I love having conversations that are real, and I just feel like we, from the first time we talked, it's lovely to talk to you, and I'm very grateful that you introduced me to your audience and for everybody who was on tonight. Thank you so much.
Well, we've got about one more minute, and I think I feel pretty complete because we would just launch into a whole other long story.
Exactly.
And I do wish you were closer, but I will be going down to Florida in March, so maybe we will get a chance to see each other. I'm not sure what town you're in. But
I would love that. And I come to New York a couple times a year, so we'll definitely meet in person.
That would be great. And yes. So I really advise everybody to check out, follow Allison on Twitter and check out her stuff. And I love your book, so, I love my mess, and I love your mess.
Thank you. Thank you. I love yours, too.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Have a good night. Thank
bye.
You. Okay, bye.